Welcome to Wake Up and Pay Attention, the podcast fueling positive change from the inside out. I'm Mark Robertson, your host. With over 25 years as a professional coach, I'm thrilled to explore the personal growth tools that have helped me and hundreds of people just like you design and awaken to their best life. If you've ever felt overwhelmed and unfulfilled, like you're just going through the motions day after day, maybe you're afraid one day all the balls are going to drop, you're in the right place. Together, let's expand our self-awareness and make sustainable shifts that improve our communication skills, relationships, and overall well-being. This is a judgment-free zone where openness, understanding, and support rule. So grab your headphones and get ready. It's time to wake up and pay attention. Hello, listeners. Welcome to episode 8 of Wake Up and Pay Attention. I'm once again really excited today about continuing the conversational journey and doing this episode, which is actually a follow-up episode to episode 7 on assessments and assertions. So as we get started, a couple things real quick. It's still allergy season in Nashville. I'm still fighting the crud, so if my voice is a little off, apologies for that. Hopefully it's bearable. Also want to talk about, since I dropped the episode 7 last Friday, I've had a couple of really powerful conversations with important people in my life, and I'll probably touch on them at some point in this episode. But it was really great feedback to hear how it's impacting them and really caused me to think about how I wanted to do this episode and probably deepened my thinking some and got me excited even more about what I want to offer you today. So I'm thankful to those people. They know who they are for that feedback, and just invite you yet again to please feel free to rate the podcast on Apple and other platforms. And maybe more importantly to me, offer me feedback at mark@coachmark.com or on LinkedIn if you access it there. So where are we headed today? We'll continue to build on episode 7. And I'm kind of excited about today because I think it'll give me an opportunity to freelance a little bit in a way that I haven't been able to before, just because it's a follow-on episode to the last one. So here's my approach. What I want to do at a minimum is to connect a few more ideas to the fundamental ideas that I offered you last time. So those were the basic distinction of an assessment assertion, some key pieces to that, which I'll touch on again, and then the three primary aspects that I touched on last time. So I'll probably reconnect some of those pieces with some additional pieces. And then depending on time, I may offer some additional concepts or thoughts or dimensions of the distinction, sort of some one-hitters that will have you understand the power of this distinction even more and invite you to look at how it may be playing out in your life and how I'm applying it and how others are applying it. After that, this will likely leave us with a few more meaty topics around this distinction. It's such a powerful one. And those will probably be standalone episodes on their own. We'll get to those either in 9, 10, or 11 or somewhere down the line when it makes sense. So let's dig in for today. I think where I want to start is to recap the basic distinction. If you remember the two sentences I used to introduce the speech acts of assessments and assertions, I am a man, I am stupid. I am a man is an assertion. Remember the nature of assertions. Those are provable, true or false by all observers. This is the objective, measurable territory. I am stupid or smart, outgoing or laid back, reserved, confident, a wonderful speaker, an average speaker, a terrible speaker. These are all assessments, which are judgments, which are opinions, perceptions, whatever word you resonate with. And in contrast to assertions, where assertions are always true or false, provable by all observers, assessments never true or false. They always depend upon the observer making them. It's really important to understand that distinction between the two. And we'll build on those today. So as an aside, the thought I wanted to share with you to start this conversation today is an expression that I got from my time at Education for Living when I was apprenticing and training to be an ontological coach in my journey. And it goes like this. I remember how much it hit me and spoke to what happens when human beings interact or meet one another or engage with one another. And here's the thought. If you're busy judging me, you miss the experience I can be for you. If you're busy judging the other, you miss the experience they can be for you. And so I think for me, what that provokes is this idea of how much we can judge others and miss them and miss the connection to them. I think we've all had the experience of feeling judged by another, like their eyes are looking you up and down, sizing you up. And I don't think it leaves a great impression on us, a great feeling in us. And I think we do the same sometimes. So just again, I'll just say it one more time. If you're busy judging me, you miss the experience I can be for you. So how many experiences of others have you genuinely missed or experienced with those in your life right now? Important relationships, and you're missing them. They're missing you because of all the judging going on. So I will start back into this distinction by reconnecting to what I talked about last time with a few more ideas. So here they are. So if you remember, I talked about the linguistic trap, the moment we begin to hold our assessments as if they're assertions. So it's just really fundamentally important as you go forward to hold these separate at all times in both your thinking and in your speaking. And then when you behave differently than that assessment, or someone else in your life behaves differently, be willing to update your assessment of them. Be willing to get off of it. I think it can be incredibly powerful, creates an amazing opening in our relationships and our ability to communicate with one another. So just don't collapse them. And be willing to update your assessments. I think this is going to date me, but I think of the band 38 Special. And I love that song, Hold On Loosely, But Don't Let Go. So hold your assessments loosely, but don't let go. The example I think about it from my own life was related to my marriage and looking back on it. And one of the thoughts I had after that was, when you look at our long-standing historical relationships, whether it's intimate relationships, friendships, the ones we've had for a long time, I think our historical assessments can be hard to get out from under, can be really hard to do the thing I asked you to do, which is be willing to update your assessment about that person, because we've spent so much time with them over and over. We often find ourselves repeating the same assessments about them again and again in such a powerful way that we come almost preloaded to the next interaction because we've assessed them the same way for so long. The thought I had back when I was thinking about that was the expression, there's too much water under the bridge for us to make a shift here. Too much water under the bridge. I've been assessing them the same way for way too long, and my ability to move off of that assessment is really difficult because it's been going on for so long. So I hope that idea makes sense to you. The next piece to connect back, remember I said assertions are the descriptive act. They just sit there. That's what they do. They're descriptive and factual, whereas assessments are generative and creative. And I don't think I touched on it enough last time, but I want to build on that with this idea. They are generative and creative, whether they're positive or negative. It happens. It works in both directions. I use a lot of negative assessment examples because that's often where our suffering is. But there can also be suffering created in yourself and others through positive assessments. And so that's the aspect that I talked about last time about when we put people in a box they can't get out of. That box can be a pretty box, positive box, or a negative box. So a couple examples I'll share with you today. One was from a really important person in my life that I was around this weekend, and she listened to the podcast and brought up an example from her own life, which was the assessment when she was growing up that she often had from others, which was she was pretty. And you would think that's obviously a positive assessment. But the language that I think went with that as she moved through life, there was other stuff attached to that I think got in the way. So she talked about she was pretty. It was almost as if people assessed her as pretty and then overlooked any of the other positive qualities about her, how intelligent she was, how aware she was, how good she was at so many things, was often dismissed because she's pretty. And obviously the assessment of pretty people is they don't have these other talents. And she talked about being in engineering school. She graduated with an engineering degree. She was first in her class. And there were multiple examples in school about, you're so pretty. This is surprising maybe that you were able to do this well. Or I can't remember the exact examples that she gave me. I wish I could, but was a really powerful example of, wow, how that seemingly positive assessment shaped other people's perspective on her and got in the way in the same way that a negative assessment can. The example that I often use in this one was more of a corporate example. Back when I worked for Anderson Consulting a long time ago, we would get sized up pretty quickly on our first project and second project, and we'd get put in a box, labeled and branded as rockstar employee or subpar. And the rockstar employee assessment could be really good for meaning you were going to get staffed on the next few projects really easily, but it may have gotten in the way of people being willing and able to see your weaknesses, see your areas for growth. And I think it can cause problems for those people as much as the negative assessment initially of subpar. Maybe you've had a few challenges in learning or moving along, and at Anderson you were expected to do so very quickly. And because you got assessed as subpar and that assessment was shared amongst the managers and partners, you often were put on the bench and not selected right away for projects unless the need was high for more bodies. So I hope that example as well makes sense. What's the next one? Remember, I talked about assessments never true false, only depend on the observer, always depend on the observer. And the relationship between the two, assessments and assertions, is that you want to be able to ground any assessment you have. Remember, human beings are assessment machines, so we quickly assess, quickly. So your historical assessments or your immediate assessments, you want to at some point examine those for grounding. Do I have assertions, facts to support my opinion? And it's very clear so that when I enter a conversation with someone, I can, when I realize they have an opposite assessment than me, you can provide your grounding. Hopefully they'll listen and you can ask for them to ground theirs so that you can figure out how to move forward in that conversation. And so grounding is really important. Ungrounded assessments often cause lots of challenges and problems. And so one of the ways that I see that playing out when I talk with my clients is I've been listening to my clients for years, and often they'll talk to me about challenges or issues that other people have come to them and said, hey, this is what happened and this is why it happened and so on and so forth. And they'll run that down. They'll chase it down and they'll assume that's a grounded assessment and they'll go act upon it quickly. And I said, hold on. So the thought that I leave them with these days is don't buy the surface story you hear. Don't buy the initial story. Make sure you probe for grounding. Where'd they get the information? Who did it come from? Is it based in fact? But I find in our culture these days, we're often quick to buy the surface story, either from others or via the internet or social media. And then we act upon that because remember, assessments lead us into the future, lead us to take action based on them. And we're often buying the story way too quick. And remember what we talked about with stories. Those are the weaving of assessments together into a coherent story. And so don't buy the initial story. Get grounding and make sure you have a solid sense of how well grounded it is. Then go explore, search for other grounding, involve other people, get their perspectives before you jump to action. And then maybe equally important is be careful that you don't then take that perhaps ungrounded story and go spread it around in your workplace or at home, in your family or in anywhere, because it'll just be doing even more damage the more that story, that ungrounded story, is spread. And I see it happening everywhere. Another issue related to that is one of, I think, the current cultural challenges we have. One of my assessments the last few years is when I have assessments about things, where do I go find the facts to ground my assessments about things? It's like we live in a time of what are the facts anymore? It's almost as if we've lost those. They're hard to find. And it's hard for us to have conversations about the facts. And remember, facts provable true false by all observers. So I think many of us go on the internet or social media, read something, think, oh, well, that must be a fact. It must be true if such and such website said it. And we go off and we spread it. And so an example I had for this was around my health. I've had some challenges with 6 knee surgeries over the years, a knee replacement a few years ago, some back issues. And so I've been trying to get healthy. And what I discovered over the last 3 years is there are so many different assessments about why that's happening, what the best way to treat this is, the best way to move forward, how to best take care of your health from a health and wellness perspective. And when you go out on the internet and you Google and you search for things, it's like there are 800,000 different opinions all purporting to have the facts. And it's, what are the real facts here that can help me ground my assessment and make decisions about how I want to move forward? So that's a dimension as well. An additional dimension related to, remember we talked about whose assessments do you give authority, whose opinions you give weight. This is a quick one, but I think about social media, and I don't really go on social media much, pretty much just LinkedIn, but I hear lots of stories about social media and keyboard warriors and people posting things and then getting attacked by other people on social media, or like people that are overly dependent on likes and are crushed when other people don't like them. Remember this, folks. Other people's assessments are never the truth. Your assessments are never the truth. When someone comes, when you post something and someone writes a negative comment about what you post, it's not the truth about you. It's just their assessment of what you wrote based on who they are and their experience. You don't have to engage with them. You don't have to get triggered and so upset and go create drama around it and spread it around. Likes on social media are just that. Just an assessment by someone. So what? And so there's more to that, and maybe there'll be a separate episode, but I just want to speak to really pay attention to in your life. If you want to be grounded, authentic, and confident, give few people's assessments authority and invite those judiciously, and invite them from people who are observers that you trust in a particular domain. And that's probably a piece I need to introduce now, which is, we make assessments in different domains. You can assess me in terms of my ability to keep the house, and you might assess me very differently in terms of how I dress, and very differently in terms of how I coach, and very differently in terms of how I do a podcast. All of those assessments in a way. And so we need to start being targeted with our assessments. And in what domain am I assessing myself? In what domain am I assessing this person? And we'll talk a little more about that, since that one just popped in my head as one that I think is important to discuss. Here's another catchy saying. It's related to this, what I've been talking about with authority. Assessments often say more about the observer making them than they do about the thing being assessed. Assessments sometimes say much more about the person that's making them than the thing or the person that's being assessed. And so that's an additional wrinkle in here to be thinking about. In a way, I would actually say anytime someone else assesses you, positive or negative, it tells you something about the assessor they are. It's something about them. So when you start weighing feedback, be careful, again, who you give authority. It often says more about them and how they look at things and less about you, something you should consider. And the last one is related to the other piece, that important aspect I touched on, which is the I'm right background conversation, or I'd rather be right than happy. Just a thought about how embedded that is historically in our culture for decades, maybe even centuries. And it plays out in this way. Often we'll be in conversations with people and someone will say that, say something, offer an assessment, and someone goes, right? Right? You know, like, right? It's just like, we don't even think about it. It's automatic. Or someone will say something and then they'll say, am I right or wrong? Am I right or wrong? Now I've equipped you with the tool of neither. What you said is an assessment. You're neither right or wrong. And so let's have a different conversation around this. That template is a trapping template in terms of our ability to try to have conversations around it. So those are the pieces I wanted to reconnect to what I talked about last time or build on. Some additional aspects that I'd like to add to the basic distinction for today are these. There's about 8 or 10 of them. So some new ideas for you to begin thinking about and digesting. Okay. And so what are those? Let me get to those now. The first one is, our assessments are made from some standard. So I want you to think about your standards. All assessments are made from a standard, and sometimes they're hard to identify. Each of us, because we're different observers, often have different standards about different things in different areas or different domains of our life. So the example that I'll use here to try to clarify this is, let's talk about the assessment of whether someone's reliable or not. And let's imagine that you and I are talking and we're saying, we're evaluating one of the people that works for us. And our standards are, For reliability, I'll say I'm going to judge him or her as reliable. If they are on time for work at 8 a.m. every day this month and they only miss that one time, that's my standard. Your standard is a bit more, quote, relaxed. You say, well, I'll give them 3 or 4, maybe 5 times to arrive after 8 o'clock, and I'll still think of them as reliable unless they go past that. So this person that is working for us, they show up the first time at 8 o'clock. They show up consistently at 8 o'clock, but mid-month, they happen to show up at 8:10, and I go, well, there's their miss, but I'm still holding them reliable. And then the next week, they show up at 8:10, and all of a sudden, they move from the reliable box to me to unreliable. They literally are being assessed differently, and they have changed in my eyes. Whereas for you, they're still reliable. They still have 2 or 3 more opportunities to show up after 8 o'clock, and they'll stay in the reliable category. But if they go over that, they'll move to unreliable. So it's about standards. You and I have different standards around how we're making our assessments. What I find is that oftentimes when we get in a battle of assessments, we have different assessments with others. We go to war over them. That's too dramatic. I talked about that last time. It's not war. We battle over them. We fight with one another because we hold ours to be true or right and yours is wrong. And so we don't have a productive conversation. Oftentimes what's needed there is to drop the conversation from it, to notice that we have different assessments and drop it to standards. Let's examine, do we have the same standards here from which we're assessing that might help us understand the disconnect, help us be able to close the disconnect and move forward. So that's one. A few other sayings. Widely held assessments by a group of people still never become assertions. For example, if 10 people have the same opinion about someone or a similar opinion in the same ballpark as someone, it doesn't make it true. It just makes it a widely held assessment about them. Isn't that interesting? Something I think we do often. Everybody thinks that it must be true. Nope. It just might be a widely held, well-grounded assessment, but it's never the truth about them. In addition, there's an aspect to assessments that I would say, be careful that you don't borrow other people's assessments about someone you've never met. And I think this happens all the time. In many instances, I have found that, I'll give you a corporate example. Let's say that the outgoing leader has found another job. They're moving to another company. They've got a team of 6 people. I'm the incoming leader that they've hired to work with this team and revamp them maybe or make them even more successful. And I meet you the day I come in and you're getting your stuff together. You're on your way out and you say, look, let me tell you about the team you're going to get. And I would say, nope, I don't want to hear about them. I want to make my own assessments based on my own experience of them. If you listen to all those assessments about that outgoing leader, it's going to shape immediately how you view each of those team members the moment you meet them. And it may make it more challenging for you to get off that assessment and update or rely on your own assessment. And I think we dangerously borrow assessments about other people we've never met quite often. So don't do that. The next aspect I want to share is sort of the back to the basics of, remember, all observers, all of us, our way of being is this connection of language, emotion, and body. Okay. And so I think one of the things going on, because we're digging deeper into language, we know that it has an impact on our emotional state and our body. I want to talk today about the concept that I call emotional strength. I think actually we have a lack of emotional strength individually and collectively because our fear of how others are going to assess us. A classic example of this is public speaking, right? Years ago, I heard the data suggest that it's a number one fear in America, not dying, not something else. It was public speaking. And I think when you think about how frightened people are to speak publicly, at the core, what it's fundamentally about is I'm so scared of how those people are going to judge or assess me that I'm not going to take that action. I'm not going to put myself up in front of them, be uncomfortable for an extended period of time, work through that discomfort, and get enough practice again and again to get better at public speaking. So that fear prevents us from even taking the action, and we never build that muscle. We never build our emotional strength, which means putting ourselves in uncomfortable situations, moving through them, surviving them, so that they're easy to handle the next time. That's what I'm talking about. And usually it's some version of I'm afraid of how they're going to assess me, because it would be true if it was negative, and there's nothing I can do about that. And it's not. So we're getting in our way. So that makes me, it connects to me to the whole topic of feedback, which again, we'll probably have a separate episode on this. But one of the things I've been saying for years now in working with my executive clients and their teams and the organizations is one of the biggest missing conversations in organizations and teams is feedback. I just don't see enough teams and orgs giving and receiving honest, hard feedback with one another. Here in the South, in Nashville, it's a lot of positive, fluffy stuff and no negative. There's a fundamental belief in the Southern culture that a lot of people buy into of, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all. And that's been going on for decades, and it's still in our way from being able to have the open, honest, authentic conversations we need to have as teams and in our one-on-one relationships for growth, for learning. And that's the value of giving and receiving feedback, is it allows us to see what we don't see, and we can grow, or gives us an opportunity to choose to grow or learn. So one of my messages to you is don't be afraid to give and receive feedback in your life, wherever you think it's needed or it would be important, because it's never the truth. Anything anybody else says about you is they don't know the truth about you. They might provide an assertion, which is a truth, but most people don't. They're going to provide assessments, how you show up for them. In addition, your assessments about yourself are never the truth, never have been the truth. Don't be afraid of them, okay? So how does feedback work well? Be choosy, invite it, especially if you walk out of a meeting or an interaction and go, I wonder if I came across that way. Ask for feedback in a very targeted way. Listen to the feedback. Ask for grounding of that feedback, and then you get to choose, do I want to do anything with this or not? And so another dimension to this is let's say you talk to multiple people and you're getting feedback and it has a similar thread or the theme to it, that's when you want to really stop, take a hard look and go, I'll get 10 different observers making very similar feedback about me. I don't necessarily agree with that view about myself, but if these 10 people are saying this and I trust them and they're important, I need to look at that. I probably need to pause and reflect and take an honest look at that, then decide how grounded it is, or get grounding from them, and then decide, wow, they're on to something, and that's something I now want to choose to change and work on and grow. Or you might decide, I got enough on my plate, I'm not going to attack that now, but it's nice to know that's potentially how I'm showing up for them, and I want to be mindful about doing it a little different as much as I can going forward. Okay. So some examples of that piece are, like, makes me think about, and especially in organizations, like the assessment tests that people take and the way they often will speak about them that gives you a clue that they're holding them, like, this is the way that I am because this test says so. So for example, like the Myers-Briggs test, are you an ESFJ or an INTP? And people will often use that as an excuse not to take different behavior because, oh, I'm an I, I'm not an E, or I'm a P or a T or an S. So no, it's just an assessment test, a very maybe valid and reliable assessment test, but it's not the truth about you. Same thing for the Enneagram. It's become very popular these days. I hear it a lot more, but it's really just a classification of some aspect of you. It's an assessment test. It has value. It's really important to give you an understanding of maybe more of your nature, your general natural style around things, but it never is the truth such that it puts you in a box and you cannot behave differently than that. It just doesn't work that way with this distinction. The one I use a lot with leaders is the Hogan. And so we talk about that one in that way as well. In addition, a lot in organizations, if I got leaders listening to this, are 360 degree assessments. A lot of executives like to start their engagements with 360 assessments. So it's a 360 degree ask of people around you. Above you, your bosses, sideways, your peers, and below you, your direct reports, and then maybe others that have those relationships with you. We gather all that, their perspectives, their information, some of the data. We present this assessment, And remember, it's never the truth about you either. Now, there may be facts to ground the assessments they're offering, but often I find a lot of times in many 360s, they're not providing strong grounding. People are not really asked after their general assessment, give me some specific examples that back up your opinion, because most people are afraid to do that. Guess why? Because they're afraid if they give a very specific interaction or example, the person being assessed is going to identify who they are and there will be retribution of some sort. So there are some internal traps going on almost in some of these tools we're trying to use effectively, and they get in our way. What's one more notion? I have kind of touched on it, but I want to introduce now the whole notion of stereotyping or labeling. Because assessments are generative, there's a danger, obviously, when we assess people, especially negatively, or we label them, we stereotype them, both positive and negative, because remember, it predisposes us to view them a certain way when we interact with them going forward. So after the first or second interaction, we've assessed them, put them in the box, oh, they're this, oh, they're that, and maybe we now hold that to be the truth. It funnels the way we'll look at them and the way we'll engage with them. But sort of pulling back a little bit, the distinction of starting to label people or judge them or stereotype them, I think of it this way. It's like that because we've assessed them that way, the conversation we're about to go have with them has already been had. We've already thought it through based on those assessments. We know how it's going to unfold. We know what we're going to say. We know what they're going to say or how they're going to react. And so it's already been had. So we walk into the encounter. And there it goes. We open with our assessments and away it unfolds. And then often we'll later say, I knew it was going to go that way. And that's often because of previous assessing, labeling, or judging. And so I'll introduce again another idea, which is a loaded word, but that's prejudice. If you think about looking hard at some of our prejudices, if you think about the word prejudice, it essentially is prejudging, which can be even more dangerous. I've judged some group of people, whether it's politicians, used car salesmen, or it's people with a certain skin color, these people or those people, or people from different countries, I've prejudged them. And these assessments I have, when I meet someone from that group, I have a group-wide assessment, it immediately affects the way I engage and interact with them. So I want you to be careful about labeling and stereotyping and prejudging. Again, it kind of fits with just notice them. We all probably have them. Be willing to get off of them. Be willing to walk into conversations, willing to get off of them, willing to put them aside. And let me assess freshly here with this unique human being that I'm interacting with. I think it could serve us tremendously well in terms of having some of the challenging, difficult conversations that we find ourselves in professionally and personally in this culture that we don't seem to be able to move through. I think that's it for today in terms of those ideas. Wrapping up in the way that I always do, sort of a summary, I got to thinking about how do I summarize this one? And what I'll say is that I don't know that I can. I've shared a number of different sort of quick hitters about how we use them. And so I guess I would just invite you as a summary to think about when you stop this episode, pause, maybe grab something to write with and capture, what are the one or two or three that really resonated with you the most today? Write those down. And so you can begin to distill them into your thinking and maybe do something with them. Hopefully that makes sense. So based on summarizing in that way, here's your homework for next time. Use what resonated with you, what landed most for you to create your own homework assignment is one option around assessments, assertions. And so what might that be? For example, you could journal. Here's a question for you to journal around. How does knowing this distinction now begin to change your way of being? And remember, that's your thinking, your speaking, your emoting or feeling, and your acting, your body. See, think, feel, and act. How could this open possibilities for you to see, think, feel, and act differently? Building upon that is like looking at perhaps in an important relationship, personally, professionally, or interaction, like what story have you bought about yourself or others that you need to now investigate further for facts, see if it's grounded or not, and then possibly change it, because that story is generative. It is either often empowering or disempowering. So for yourself, if we want to bring it back to you, what assessments have you been holding as truth, or what story do you hold as truth? And you suffer because you revisit that over and over. It pops up in your thinking constantly and you dwell on it. That's what I mean by unnecessary suffering. It's linguistic suffering. Can you begin to see that it's never been true about you? Look for grounding to support it, especially if it's negative, and then look for grounding that denies it, for the opposite assessment, the positive, and loosen its hold on you and start to speak more positively about yourself. I'll give you this as the last thing. One of the assignments I often do with my clients, and I've done it before and it was really powerful, is what I call create a biography of assertions. Literally sit down, open up a Word document or use a pen and pencil and paper and write down the facts of your life. Start from where were you born, to what parents, in what city, at what hospital, and move through your earlier years, your elementary school, middle school, high school, college, if you did that, up till into your career. Offer assertions around relationships, important relationships, but provide a biography of assertions. You want to know who you truly are? Here you are. These are the facts of your life. Everything else are assessments that you or others have made. Do this and then begin to notice how do the facts of my life stack up against the story I've been telling myself and others have been telling me about who I am. You might find a small disconnect or a massive disconnect, wherever it happens to be, and then you can realize it is time for me to rewrite my story to a more empowering story that's grounded in these facts. So I'll leave you with that. We may do something with that in the future, but you choose your homework based on what resonated with you most in this episode. And I hope it was a lot of things. There were a lot of things that resonated with you in this episode. So I'll close as I often do. Be gentle with your assessments. Examine them. Be willing to let go of them, be both for yourself and others. And as you move forward, thank you again for listening to the podcast. Hope it's provoked some thinking. And some thinking that you'll act upon. But most importantly, be well. Understand your brilliance, your excellence. See those things and assess those things. Be well until the next episode. And I will talk to you soon. We'll continue the conversation for Wake Up and Pay Attention. Take care. Well, my friends, that's a wrap for today. I'm so grateful you joined me and hope you feel energized by the insights we took a deeper look at together. If anything resonated with you or inspired new thinking, drop me a note. I'd love to hear your biggest takeaway. Please join me next time as we dive deeper into this never-ending journey of self-discovery. Until then, be well, be present, live fully and authentically. Wake up and pay attention.